This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
We have a Nets-Knicks game tonight.
Yeah.
I'd say at the beginning of the year, you looked at this game on February 16th and go, yeah, let's take clothes off. This is going to be great. But the Knicks
That's a poo-poo take.
They're in a death spiral. The Nets, no Kyrie. Durant's hurt. Harden is ringing a bell in Philadelphia. But there's still a cachet to it. It'll be on Yes. It'll be on MSG. It'll be on ESPN. You could actually listen
on
to it
TV.
On 98.7 ESPN. But the Knicks season has been a major disappointment. You can't say the Nets season has been because we haven't seen the Net team that was supposed to be, really. So the way it was designed would not be a disappointment because I think they would win and they win a lot more games. The Knicks, these are your New York Knicks.
Yeah.
And they're terrible. This is the way this team was envisioned other than Derrick Rose, and they are dreadful. So the Knicks are much, much more of a disappointment. And here was Jeff Van Gundy on Bart and Hahn today, and he talked about what's wrong with the Knicks.
You have to hold on to hope that Barrett comes back, Rose comes back, and even though you have a tough schedule, you find your way with a rotation. But since I'm not part of the team and I observe, and I think I've watched every game but three or four this year of the Knicks because I'm obviously a huge fan of the Knicks and Thibodeau, is I don't see it. I haven't seen it from the start of the year. When you have a mediocre roster, you have to play with a hunger and a desperation that we saw last year. And this year, still a mediocre roster, particularly in the top-end talent, and they've had a few more health issues, and they just don't have, as you see in the last two games, I would say these corrections are going to have to take place in the offseason, and they're going to be personnel-based. You've got to get top-end talent and top-end talent that fits together well. And right now, I don't think the fit is there, and I don't think the talent overall is there.
And that's why I think most of the blame for this goes to the front office. No matter how you want to delineate power there, Leon Rose, William Wesley, Scott Perry, they put together a really bad roster that doesn't jive with what their coach wants to do. Now, is Thibodeau having a good year? Absolutely he's not. When you have a brain cramp and you go for a challenge that you don't even have and blow your last timeout, might have cost you the game because you couldn't call a timeout with the 5.2 seconds left to set up a play. Now, bottom line, they got a fairly good shot that Julius Randle didn't hit, but that's the time that you would have called the timeout. That's where a coach earns his money to set up a last-second play. But, you know, Don has brought this up, and we brought it up with Ian as well previously. I personally don't think you fire Tom Thibodeau. This is a 64-year-old coach who's won two Coach of the Year titles. Is he having a bad year this year? Yes, on a poorly put-together team. But he has not been great. But if you pull the plug on this guy, who are you bringing in? I mean, Tom Thibodeau is about the top of the line of who you could have brought in. Yeah, Jeff Van Gundy, I understand that too, but they passed him over a couple of times already when you know he wants to come back and coach the Knicks. I mean, he's expressed a desire how much he loves the team. He's patched things up with Dolan. You can't get rid of big-time coaches. Tom Thibodeau's a big-time coach. When you fire David Fizdale, good.
Right.
I applaud it. He was awful. Derek Fisher, I applaud it. Awful. But Tom Thibodeau does have a resume. I don't think you can just willy-nilly fire the guy because of one bad year.
But
you've got to bring him back.
You know, it's been a bad year because part of his charm last year was he was able to get so much out of the players, and he's really not done that this year. They've been outworked at times. They haven't played defense at times. That's not a Thibodeau team. Thibodeau's supposed to be the coach that when you do have a lack of talent, he finds a way to get by, to get more out of it. So I get what you're saying. You don't want to fire a coach after 2 years, but I would think the lease would have to be short next year.
You know, probably.
If they're 3-17 to start the year, I can't imagine him surviving that.
But it is true. It's a different situation when you have a lauded coach like this. It's not like, listen, for us watching, it has been an abomination because they're losing games they should not lose. But when you really look at the talent they have on their roster, and you look at their record, is it truly a coaching abomination? And you guys know I've blamed him for some of the recent losses. I think if your team's doing the same thing over and over again and you're not able to make changes, you're not doing your job. But guys, 25 wins at this point of the year. How many wins should they have? Four more? How below the standard is he really at this moment?
Well, I mean, that's a tough question. Again, unless you watch every single game, he's stubborn with his rotation.
Yep.
He got R.J. Barrett hurt by having him late in the game, in a game that they're down by 15. No need for that, and he's known for that. That's a problem with him. He is not incorporating the young guys. Obi Toppin got 8 minutes in the last game against OKC, and Cam Reddish got 8 minutes. So the biggest problem to me is there is a disconnect between the front office and Thibs.
Right. Why are you getting players he doesn't want to play?
Right. He did not want Reddish. He didn't want him. And I don't think he wanted Kemba Walker. What are you doing? Why are you bringing in people that don't fit with what the coach does? Now, on the flip side, a great coach changes and is amoeba-like with talent that isn't quite the perfect talent for him. He has not done that. He continues to be Tom Thibodeau. So I think that's a strike against him. But it's more of a strike against Leon Rose because the front office did not do a good job. Kemba Walker, terrible idea. And we thought it was good at the time, so we'll take the hit, but we're not making that decision. Evan Fournier, awful decision. He'll have a great game and 6 bad ones, a great game and 5 bad ones. It's not what you need, and that's what you don't want to tie that much money. Nerlens Noel, looks like he has a chronic knee injury, and you gave him 3 years? For what? A guy that can't score, you gave him 3 years, $30 million? It's a moronic contract. So the Knicks are an ill-conceived team, and we have a president of baseball operations that has not spoken since September. Has not given anybody a clue on what his thought process is. Nothing.
Not,
and he's allowed to get away with it.
So what does Dolan do? Does he fire him? Does he fire everybody? Or does he do what Ian suggested and just takes it out on Randall and trade him away? I can't imagine he's going to just sit idly by after this type of embarrassment and do nothing.
Well, you bring up a good point when you compare it to the Rangers, because the Rangers weren't supposed to do anything. It was part of the rebuild. And he just didn't like the way the season ended and got rid of an icon.
Right.
Now, Tom Thibodeau had a New Yorkers loved him last year. He ain't no icon. He's not John Davidson. He got rid of John Davidson.
No, he did not like how they got pushed around by the Islanders and the Capitals. He was embarrassed, and he did something about it, whether it was right or wrong. And now you look at it, and it looked like it was right. Chris Drury's done a great job. But it would be interesting if he did that with the Rangers and then just sits idly by and doesn't do anything with the Knicks.
Yeah, it's weird.
Is he a bigger fan of the Rangers than the Knicks? We've heard rumors about that. Where
I think he's more of a hockey. I think he knows hockey more than he knows basketball. I think hockey is his first love. So I think he has a feel on hockey. You can see he's reaching and trying for anything with basketball. Isaiah Thomas, Larry Brown, Isaiah Thomas, Phil Jackson. He's searching. You know, he kind of went with Glenn Sather and stayed there, Don. Glenn Sather still has influence in the organization.
Yeah.
So he found the right guy to lean on in hockey. He's never found that right guy in basketball. Is it Leon Rose? Well, this has been a bad year for Leon Rose.
I just can't see him doing nothing.
Well, maybe you do make trades. They've got to redo this roster. And maybe one of the benefits here is that Julius Randle is going to finish strong. He's been very, very good in his last 5 games. So if he continues and finishes out the season this way, all of a sudden he does have trade value, because we talk about that 4-year contract extension that they gave him. It's not onerous at all, not in today's world, not when James Harden's next contract is going to make $60 million. So, you know, Julius Randle makes $23 million. That's not going to break the bank. It's just not. Let's go to the phone or phones. Let's go to Joe in New Jersey. Joe.
Gentlemen, good afternoon. I hope everybody's well.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. A few years back, correct me if I'm wrong, you had Jim Dolan in studio.
Yep,
when
sure.
Phil Jackson was the general manager.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Dolan, said he leaves all the basketball decisions to Phil Jackson. So all these years later, Jim Dolan still doesn't appear to be involved. He's still leaving decisions up to the higher-ups, and they're not on the same page as the rest of the team, the coach and the players. They're getting players that aren't put in by the coach, and it doesn't seem like anything has changed over the last few years.
Well, I think he trusts his front office people, Joe, but to say that, you know, I think his famous quote on the when he sat down with us, well, ask Phil, right?
Right.
But who has control over Phil? Jim. So if Jim doesn't like the job Phil's doing, The biggest mistake that Jim made was firing Phil after the draft. It was like when Woody Johnson, or Chris Johnson, whoever it was, fired Maccagnan after he spent all the money they had to spend after getting under the cap. Moronic. Dumb moves. You don't make a guy have a draft pick and then fire him a week later, bring in somebody else to make the draft pick. But if Jim Dolan is allowing Leon Rose to do it, which I believe he gives them the authority to do what they want, but if he looks back and takes a step back and goes, this isn't working, you know what? He can fire Leon Rose. Leon Rose is not going to fire Leon Rose. So if you ask me, pick everybody out there. Here's the whole group that's involved. Who's more to blame for this, Thibs or the front office? Front office. Easy. Yeah. Because you know what? Tom Thibodeau has a track record. Front office has no track record. They were agents. And the track record on agents becoming great front office manipulators, not that great. Bob Myers in Golden State's the best one. The best one. Tell me the next best one. Brody Van Wagenen is back to being an agent.
Well, if he does clean house the front office, I mean, do you force the new regime to keep Thibodeau?
I don't know if, I mean, it's not like you're forcing somebody to have, you know, castor oil. He's a coach that's respected. So I don't think you force him, but, you know, if he wants to keep him, he wants to keep him. I don't think that's a big ask. Let's go to Gavin in Millstone. Gavin.
Hey, how are you doing? Just a quick question in terms of Thibodeau. I don't think it's a good thing to have him as a coach. He doesn't play the young players. If you look at the teams they're losing to, you know, as an example, Oklahoma City the other night, Minnesota, Cleveland, they're all playing young players. They're all developing, you know, their players. And Thibodeau, not like Pat Riley, hasn't made any adjustments. Pat Riley came here. It wasn't showtime. It was the players he had, and he was able to get the best out of them, given what he had to work with. So I'm not a big Thibodeau fan because if you look as an example, you know, Quentin Grimes, it took a while for him to play, but he's much more efficient than some of the other players that they have in a team like Fournier. But yet Fournier gets minutes. I don't understand. You know,
well,
so
Gavin,
you know,
I can't argue with
players,
you. I think you're right. He's too stubborn, and he has to give in. And at some point, I think Don has hit on this the most, and he's right. I think the Garden thinks that making the play-in holds some magical elixir for the bad season. At some point, they ought to get together, and they have to order Thibodeau, play Reddish, play Toppin. Sit down the veterans. We have to see what these guys are. Moving forward, what they are. We got to do that.
I know. That's the thing. And how long do you let a coach, I don't want to say run roughshod, but like at what point is it the time? You would say now, right?
I would say now, especially with this upcoming stretch. And you bring up OKC. They don't really have that many veterans, so it's not a tough call. This is a real teardown, but the Knicks are in the worst possible situation you could be in. Kind of in, kind of out. Right in the middle, kind of out. So they do have a chance to make the play-in if they miraculously pull off wins. But is it worth it at the expense of not playing? Obi Toppin, 8 minutes? Why? Cam Reddish, 8 minutes. Why? Again, he's being stubborn. That's part of his track record. When you hire him, that's what you get. He doesn't like to play young players. And when you give him an option and you bring out Derrick Rose, a 34-year-old, who everybody is looking to be the savior, you're giving him what he wants. You're giving him a veteran. Julius Randle, a veteran. Fournier, essentially a veteran. You're giving him the option to play veterans. Taj Gibson, Nerlens Noel, that's what he feels comfortable with. If you took all of those veterans away, he'd have to play the kids. But again, they want to make the playoffs, and maybe last year was fool's gold. They looked at that record and go, you know what, we can take the next step. And they made ill-advised moves. They didn't take the next step. They took giant steps backward, and that's where we are right now. You've got a coach who's only won and has only had a veteran-laden team. And Don has also said this, is this the right coach for a team that's going to play young players? Probably doesn't want to be here. He's running out of time. He's 64 years old. You think he wants to, like, coach a bunch of young players?
That's all I'm asking is it the right fit for where they're going? Now, they make a bunch of moves, think they could be competitive next year. then maybe he's the right guy again. But if they're going to be in a rebuild and you got to play young kids, is he the guy? That he's going to be stubborn and not do that? I would think if they make some deals, it's going to be to improve and make the playoffs. I don't think they want to strip it completely down.
No, and I don't think it's strippable. But, I mean, James, you got to think about Julius Randle, who I think does have some value on the open market, and get younger. And it doesn't mean that they have to get worse. Get good young players. Shed some salary. And I've always said that salary cap is there, but you have to have it available just in case. Just in case for some reason Damian Lillard goes, you know what, I want to play in New York. You got to be able to maneuver, have assets and cap room.
Now, remind me, as the 10 seed, they'd only be guaranteed one game, right?
One home game.
No. One road game.
9 versus 10, the loser.
They play the 9 at home.
Gone. Mm-hmm. 7 versus 8, they get a second game. Mm-hmm. Right? Against the loser.
Against the winner of the 9-10.
Right. So they might only get one road game.
Yeah, it's not worth it to me. It's not worth it.
Well, but you got your own network, and I get, would that game be on MSG or national television? I just think they see something about going to the playoffs back-to-back years. I don't. All right? I think it's a fallacy. Think about it, Michael. With these play-ins, 20 of the 30 teams are going to the playoffs.
But think about it. In all likelihood, you know, well, if they completely fall apart, and with the schedule they have coming up, that is possible, then okay. But if they don't completely fall apart, they're 2 games out.
Right. You know, Adam Silver, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, was on with Get Up today. You know what he said? He considers the play-in the regular season.
Hmm.
And then when you win the play-in, then you're in the playoffs.
That's a good way to look at it.
Because it's not called the wild card. It is, in fact, called a play-in.
Right.
And I don't think you sacrificed the future of your franchise to get into a play-in game.
I don't, but I think the Knicks do.
It's interesting when you... Isn't it funny how just switching the way you look at it and that from that perspective makes it look like they made things easier to that they made things harder? So now you're only, if you look at it from the perspective Silver gave, you're only truly a playoff team now in the NBA if you're a top 6 team.
Right.
Not a top 8 team.
But no, the 2 winners that come out of the play and then become playoff teams.
Right.
Correct. But if you finish the regular season up until the playoff game at 7 or 8, you didn't make the playoffs yet.
Not
yet. You
now
have to play to make the playoffs.
Right. Right.
And it seemed like the Knicks could steal their way in. At this point, they would not. By the way, Michael, I mean, let's give it up for my team. I mean, have you? When was the last time you saw a team turn it around this way? The Celtics have
gotten
together.
How about they just spanked the Sixers?
Yeah. I mean, it was in a word. I didn't even want to reach out to Andrew. It was disturbing what they did to them.
It was so bad, Peter, so bad that sources are telling me that Harden has requested a trade from the Sixers.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Wants to play for the Celtics now.
Well, I saw that picture going on the internet of him in a Celtics jersey.
Yeah.
And his direct quote was, James Harden doesn't play for no loser.
Right.
And he just joined the Celtics immediately.
Interesting.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and... The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, so I'm not sure if you're all familiar with a young lady who works for Bally Sports. Her name is Annie Agar.
Okay.
And she does these funny videos on Monday talking about the NFL week, where she puts on different uniform tops. Mm-hmm. It's like she has a Zoom meeting with all the teams. She's very funny and it's very well done. Well, she sent out a tweet on Monday. And she's standing there. She's a very lovely looking young lady in an orange dress at SoFi Stadium overlooking the field. And she said, such an incredible experience providing coverage at my first Super Bowl, unlike Eli Apple.
Mm.
Now, I know this for a fact. Moms get very, very protective.
Sure.
That's what they do.
I mean, my mom always wanted to call up the radio and TV guys. I said, you can't. It doesn't help. Please don't. But that's what moms do.
Right.
Well, Annie Apple went after Agar. I mean, and said something really objectionable about her, too. So I can't even read it. It's so bad. But didn't say anything about the players that also trolled her son. But she went after Agar in a big, big way. And Agar hasn't answered her, which I guess is the right move. But it's amazing how she – I wish I could read it.
But by the way, here's the thing. I understand you want to support your son.
Mm-hmm.
But does she realize that considering he's a kid whose reputation is already being a little bit of a punk at times – his mom fighting his battles doesn't help?
Well, let me read it. Because it's kind of a double entendre, but you know what she's saying. She goes, I can believe... So she quote tweets Annie Agar's quote. She said, I can believe that. Word on the street is you catch a lot of balls. Mainstream media stays on that BS. And then she has a gif where she goes, you should have just sat there and ate your food. I mean, who's she trying to be? But she didn't answer back Mecole Hardman, who said things far worse than what Annie Agar said. And I even said that when he was a Giant. Annie Apple was not a positive for her son. Getting so involved in social media and being so, like, out there, it doesn't help her son in locker rooms. It just doesn't.
No. But you can understand her being sensitive about her son. She cares about her son. She has a social media presence. A media presence, period.
Yeah, she got about 30,000 fans on Twitter.
Right. Didn't ESPN hire her when the Giants drafted him?
Yeah, which I thought was a mistake.
Right. So she's been emboldened to have an opinion. Her son's being attacked. It's her number one thing.
But I you know, she didn't answer back Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill, who really tore him apart. But she goes against this girl who's just started a career about 2 years now. I just don't think it helps Eli. Let's just put it that way. It doesn't help him.
But you sending me into this rabbit hole did make me come up on another tweet that's pretty funny by Tom Brady. Do you see that?
Yeah, go.
Don Stafford, the parade's going on. Stafford smoking a cigar. He's drinking a brewski. And Brady retweets it and writes, mix in a water, Matt. Trust me.
Now, also, from what I read about the parade, there was nobody there. L.A. doesn't care.
They don't have any fans. It's over. Sunday's over.
They said that there were more people in the parade than at the parade.
But I kind of suspected that when I heard that the parade was today. I wanted to watch it, but I didn't get a chance. That doesn't surprise me. They really don't have a fan base. And I don't want to kill any Ram fan out there, but they just got back to L.A. They didn't care that they originally left. I don't think they have a really passionate base.
All right, so we mentioned today was going to be the first pitchers and catchers workouts around Major League Baseball, and Major League players are locked out. Buster Olney, our good friend, was on with DiPietro and Rothenberg this morning, and they asked him, what's the latest on MLB?
We're nowhere. We're exactly where we were basically back at the beginning of December. And I think the most shocking development in this whole situation that's developed over the last 6 or 7 years is the fact that there's just no engagement. The players got the owner's proposal, the last, which barely moved the ball down the field and trying to get something done. That was last Saturday. They haven't talked. As far as I know at this moment, there's nothing scheduled for them to talk. And guys, even when they do talk, they're doing it over Zoom. And these conversations are lasting about 2 minutes. And you're like, can these two sides please get into a room and take this seriously? Because it doesn't feel like at the moment that anyone's showing their cards, trying to get something done. And it's now getting really serious. You know, the perception within the sport is if they don't have a deal by March 1st, then the beginning of the season is in jeopardy.
And then Buster goes further on that.
Do we have the start of the season on March 31st?
No, I don't think we do. I felt that way all along that they were in trouble because I can't identify the mechanism that was going to lead these two sides out of the woods and get them talking again. I haven't been able to identify the person who would pull them together. It's amazing. You know, we talk, it feels like every day in our country about how people, you know, don't talk, and the two sides, people on opposite sides can't talk. Baseball absolutely mirrors what's going on in this country right now.
Now, a news comes from Bob Nightingale of USA Today that now, we thought it was going to be Saturday, MLB and the Players Union have scheduled a negotiating session for tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's interesting. And one other thing I wanted to bring up about this. Everybody wants to make Rob Manfred be the bad guy. Now, part of his millions of dollars he gets in compensation is to, in fact, be the bad guy.
Bob Manfred.
But, like, there are players that have sent out tweets and have every right to say what they want. Really, really, really nasty stuff about Rob Manfred as if he's the boogeyman. Like, he's coming up with these proposals and he's keeping baseball from being played. And one of them is our good friend Marcus Stroman, who's I think he calls him Rob Manclown. Okay, if you think that's clever, fine. But I wonder, does Marcus Stroman have anything to say to the Cubs owners that are probably giving Rob, quote-unquote, Manclown his marching orders? So the players are mad at the guy that's negotiating for the owners, but why aren't they mad at the owners? They don't say anything bad about the owners. They just say it about Rob Manfred as if he's sitting in a laboratory somewhere and saying, okay, let me see what I could get. It's what small market team wants. It's what big market team wants. Mid-range team wants. Team that pays taxes want. Team that gets revenue sharing what they want. He's got to get a constituency of 30 to agree on one thing and then negotiate with the Players Association. So if the players want to aim all their enmity at Rob Manfred, have at it. Go for it. Good for you. Do what you want. But he's taking his orders from the owners.
Yeah, but it happens in every sport, Michael. You saw how the players in the NFL all hated Roger Goodell.
They all hate. They all hate Gary Bettman. But yeah, Bettman's taking his marching orders from the owners.
Yeah, but during the original lockout back in the early 90s, Chris Chelios like threatened to kill him. Like, so it's an easy, lazy player go after the commissioner. Because they don't know all of the owners and they don't know the ins and outs. It's just easy for them to just say, all right, the commissioner's against us. It's our players association against him. It just happens in every sport. So it's just a lazy way the players go about it.
And you know what? They have the right to feel angry because if they feel that there's no give and take, again, I don't know what's going on behind closed doors. But to blame it all on a guy who's doing the work of the 30 other people, come on, man. That doesn't make sense. Be smart. Turn on your own owner. Marcus Stroman should turn on the owner of the Cubs and go, well, why don't you get this done? Max Scherzer is angry. Turn on Steve Cohen. Get this done. Because the owners, once again, are telling this guy what to do. He is the messenger. His job is to negotiate and get what the owners want. It's not what he wants. He doesn't benefit from it. He gets a salary. His job is to represent the owners. Silly stuff.
Yeah, but he's not popular, just like Goodell wasn't popular because of, you know, Spygate and Deflategate. And Manfred's not popular because he called the trophy a piece of tin. Many thought he dropped the ball on not suspending the cheaters. So there's always an underlining hatred that it's easy to jump the guy you don't like. You don't trust. You don't trust Gary. You know, for the NHL, it was, why do I, this New York lawyer, when it's predominantly Canadian players, like, who is this guy who doesn't even understand our sport telling us we can't play? I admit it's lazy, but it does come from a place of they don't like the guy anyway. The fans don't like the commissioner. The players never like the commissioner. So he becomes the easy target.
He becomes the that's exactly what it is, easy and lazy. Well,
yeah, because, I mean, what's the fun of being on the side of the commissioner?
Yeah.
But they shouldn't be on the side of the commissioner, Peter, but they should realize who he's taking his marching orders from.
Yeah,
but they're probably afraid to rip the owners because the owners are the ones that will ultimately decide whether they pay them or not.
Right.
But the owners are telling Rob Manfred what they want, and he has to exercise that. That's his job.
Well, Stroman's not going to rip the Cub owner. He just got a contract from
right.
him. Well,
okay, so exactly. But go rip Rob Manfred, who's doing the Cub owner's bidding. It's just short-sighted. It doesn't make sense. Again, that's why they get paid all that money, Don, because they become the human dartboard. It's them. But it's really not them. Imagine a commissioner going rogue and negotiating a contract the way he wants it, not the way the Padres want it, or not the way the Red Sox want it, but the way he wants it. Imagine that. He'd be fired within a minute.
I wonder if these owners talk to their players and blame Manfred.
Oh, I doubt it. There's no way. I think, you know what happens, Don? I think some owners blame other owners because there are deals out there that the big market teams would want, and then there are teams that the small market teams would never want. That's why it's such a hard job. You've got to get all of these disparate franchises together and agree on something. They have different objectives. You think the Pittsburgh Pirates have the same objective as the New York Yankees?
No, they could. They can't.
They can't. In football, it's a lot easier. The money's kind of split 32 ways. In baseball, that's not it. There are big market teams, small market teams, medium market teams. You got to bring them all together and get a deal that works for all of them. And I'm sure there were owners that blame other owners for the work stoppage, but they can't blame Manfred because that would be really disingenuous.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Good first hour. Now it gets even better. A friend who's written a book joins us right now. The book is Coach K, The Rise and Reign of Mike Krzyzewski, longtime Duke head coach, head basketball coach. It's a great book. I have read it from beginning to end. And we bring in Ian right now. Ian, before we even start, you've got some things you have to patch up. Don did not receive his book until last night, and he's red hot about it.
So he received it. Okay, I thought he didn't get it. And first off, we had major issues with our warehouse in Indiana getting books out. I didn't even get a book until 3 or 4 days after a lot of other writers in the country actually had it. So I spent 2.5 years on this book and couldn't get it in my own hands. So that's my first reason. My second reason is Don was nice enough about 7, 8 years ago to invite me to play in a charity softball game in, I believe it was Hawthorne, New Jersey. Yes. And right. So I showed up and we played. We got hammered, but I thought I ran the bases pretty well, had a couple of hits, played the field. Afterward, Don said, hey, it was great having you part of the team. We'll have you back next year. And I'm still waiting for that invitation.
Don.
So as far as going the extra mile to get Don a free book, I was a little apprehensive about doing that.
Wow.
Well, I'm sorry. I put together the invite list, and sometimes people slip through the cracks. I apologize. I'd love to have you back this year. We didn't do it last year. We didn't do it the year before because of COVID. We did do it last summer.
And you didn't invite him last year. It's amazing.
No, listen, it happens.
And now also, Ian, Peter didn't get the book, but he doesn't care because he would not have read it. So,
Well, you know, listen, Peter, the negatives are in the book.
I know. So that's the thing. I was worried that this was going to be too glowing, but Ian, I mean, let's get right into it. Let's talk about this Tommy Amaker story that came out yesterday. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? It sounded pretty juicy, that he did not want Amaker to be his heir apparent.
Well, Peter, it's a story about control. Mike Krzyzewski, like a lot of these guys, is a control freak, and he wanted to keep it in the family. Tommy Amaker left in 97, so you're talking about 25 years ago. He's in his mid-50s. He was the head coach, obviously, at Seton Hall, Michigan, and now Harvard. So bringing him in, he's going to have his own ideas about how to run that program. John Shire has never coached anywhere else. He was 33 at the time Coach K basically appointed him. And it was keeping it in the family. Krzyzewski has two daughters who work in the department. Shire, he molded. It's his creation. And he's keeping his office on the sixth floor of that tower overlooking Krzyzewskiville. So he's going to be a factor in that program. Bringing Amaker in didn't really fit what he saw as a vision for the program in the future. Shire did, because Krzyzewski could then maintain a greater degree of control over the Duke basketball program. And that's why he pushed for him.
Well, it's kind of unfair, though. I mean, is he going to live forever? He has to maintain. He's 75 years old. You know, he's had a great run. He's the most decorated coach that you could think of. And he also needs control. And another thing that really isn't spoken about in the book, but and because he's always been somebody who seems like he's colorblind, but I'm surprised that, you know, race wasn't brought up in that as well. Why wouldn't you want Tommy Amaker on the Duke bench? This guy's won with Harvard 15 years. He's brought Harvard to the NCAAs, I think, 4 or 5 times out of 15 years, which is not easy. He's made that a great program. Mm-hmm. Did pretty well at Seton Hall as well. Why wouldn't you want Tommy Amaker? He is part of the family, and he was part of the recruiting group that really made Duke a forever program.
Well, Michael, I did actually touch on race some, and some former Black players at Duke said they were disappointed that he didn't get the job. And when you consider what African-American players meant to Coach K's career and legacy, there were people in the administration who that was a factor for them in wanting Amaker to get the job. And he did get the offer, first and foremost. This story's been out for, what, about 32 hours. I don't believe anyone at Duke has denied the story. They've been pretty quiet about it. Maybe they did and I didn't hear it, but I doubt it. And so, again, but I don't think it's a story about race in this context. If Jeff Capel were still the associate head coach at Duke, Coach K would have done the same thing for him. If Quinn Snyder was the outside candidate getting the offer, I think Coach K would have tried to block that one too. He just wanted, it wasn't black or white to him. He wanted his assistant coach to get the job so he could maintain a greater degree of influence over what went on going forward. Otherwise, he wouldn't keep his office like he is. And so when he wants to walk into practice, if you bring in a Tommy Amaker, a guy who's 55 now, 56 years old, and has been away from Duke for a quarter century, maybe he doesn't want any part of that. So to me, it was more about influence, control over it. And frankly, I did not criticize Coach K for doing this in the book. I've heard from a lot of Duke fans who said what arguably is true. If you are perhaps the greatest college basketball coach of all time, and you built that program with your bare hands for 42 years, you've earned the right to pick your successor. And that's a very fair point. So that's what he did, and Duke ultimately went along with it.
I guess it's just interesting to me, though, to Michael's point, you know, Duke, for the many great qualities that it has as a school, you know, diversity is something I know that they have been trying to work on. Certainly, at least in terms of the public image that people have of Duke, especially when you compare it to Durham, the place where it's located and the heavy black population they have versus the students on campus. I would imagine that for Duke, they think having a black head coach might be a good look. So to Michael's point, I just wonder, how does it benefit them to continue to please Coach K in the years moving forward? Or is it simply just that he kind of has them under his thumb?
Well, he does have a tremendous amount of influence still there, Peter. And I think one point that should be made about Duke is they have an African-American woman as athletic director, Nina King. And how many schools at the highest level of major college sports can say that. I believe three. So Duke deserves credit for that. And there were people in the administration who were very interested in hiring Tommy Amaker, in part because of his accomplishments at Seton Hall, Michigan, and Harvard. The prestige of Harvard matches up with the Duke academic identity without question, but also because he represented, he was an African-American player and assistant coach there. And given the climate, and you look at the Brian Flores lawsuit, and so I think that was not the lawsuit because that was before that unfolded, but just the climate right now in the country, the fact that Black players have meant so much to Duke basketball and to Coach K, that was definitely a consideration among the administrators who favored Tommy Amaker.
Were you a little stunned yesterday, Ian? You know, they played Wake Forest and he was there for the first half and then he wasn't there for the second half. He didn't feel well. And he was asked about the book before and he wouldn't comment. He said he'll comment after the season. Now, if any of the stuff that you wrote was something that he didn't like, he could say that's not true. He didn't do that. You wonder, is there a lot of stress on him? Again, he's 75 years old. Now, he's got a lot of pressure on him to win there. Were you surprised that he stepped away? Because in your book, you talk he's like an Iron Man. The year that he had to step away, it almost tore his heart out, and he almost had a breakdown and wanted to resign. Did that jump out at you that he wasn't on the bench in the second half last night?
Yeah, it sure did. I was in my living room watching with my wife Tracy and son Kyle, and we were stunned. And his durability is just staggering when you think of the fact that he's been a Division I head coach for 47 years and grinding every day like it's game seven of the NBA finals in the off season and during the season. It's amazing what that guy has put together in terms of a program and his durability. So to see him sit out the second half, he had to be feeling pretty bad to do that. And he's only got a couple more games at Cameron. So to give away half of a game there, that had to really hurt him. I don't know how much stress the questions about the book put on him beforehand. My suspicion is his illness had zero to do with that. But I basically had what I thought was a fairly good working relationship with people at Duke over the course of my, say, last 2.5 years of researching this book and his life. And so they knew that these two stories, the Bobby Knight excerpt and the Amaker excerpt, were coming the night before. So Krzyzewski was prepared for it. I'm assuming that his people told him. And I did give them a heads up, not every specific of what those stories were going to say, but they had a very good idea of what was coming. And so I suspect that the questions about the book had nothing to do with how he felt.
Now, you had told us a while ago that he was not going to help you with the book and speak to you about the book, but he did not stop people that are close to him speaking to you, including his wife. Where do you think the motivation was to not speak to you, but not shut down anybody close to him to speak to you?
Good question, Don. And actually, his wife did not talk to me, and his three daughters did not either. And I don't know if that was a family decision. And so,
but you have a lot of quotes from his wife, Mickey.
Past interviews, okay. Press conferences. Oh, okay. Cited sources in the back of the book. So, yeah, she did not cooperate. And basically, I think Mike Krzyzewski's reasoning was he wants to do his own book in retirement. And without saying it, I guess he said this in a nice way. Why should I give you my stories for free without any editorial control over the book? And guess what? I don't really have a good answer to that question other than you're probably right. I wouldn't do that either. But Belichick, when I did that book, he actively lobbied people not to talk to me. He contacted people. He called them up. He had his assistants ask others. I had to work around so many hurdles in that process compared to this one, where to Coach K's credit and to my everlasting appreciation, he did not try to block anyone. What was his motivation for doing that? It's a good question. I don't know. I think he was confident in what those people would say about him. And so I was able to talk to his best friends growing up in Chicago, his best friends today, his assistant coaches, current and former, and players as well. And so that's where I said Duke actually was rather transparent for a school and a program that's considered very secretive. I'm sorry, Mike, I was just going to say Duke might not be on the same level of the Patriots in the context of paranoia, but they're close enough. I have to say, though, that they were very professional in dealing with me.
I will tell you, other than, you know, the Shire Amaker thing, I mean, this is a guy who's had a long stay at the top of the mountain. And a lot of people always shoot at people at the top of the mountain. And I think that the book, you know, you delve into every aspect of his life from childhood right to today. He doesn't come off that bad, Ian. I think he's lived a pretty clean life. He's been a good husband and a good dad. And I think he also looks good in the other story that's come out in the relationship with Bobby Knight. And Bobby Knight does not look that great. He seems kind of petty, Ian.
Oh, very petty. I think that's an understatement, Michael. And I think a lot of people would have given up on that relationship 15, 20 years ago. And some of his friends wanted Coach K to give up on that relationship a long time before he finally called it quits in 2015 at Pinehurst at a West Point reunion. And I have this in the book, where after many slights, mostly real and not imagined over the years, Krzyzewski had enough. He walked into that reunion. He went up to Knight's table and Knight completely blew him off, ignored him. And Coach K stormed out of the room at Pinehurst. And some of his teammates at Army over the years told me on the record that he said, this is the last bleeping time I'm ever going to try to talk to this guy or that I'm ever going to do this. I am done. And he meant it this time. Now, he had said that in the past. There was a time where at the Garden in the mid-90s, Bob Knight ignored him before a Duke-Indiana game, and he swore that would be the last time he ever tried to talk to him again, and then he went back on that. They repaired the relationship a little bit. Bob Knight actually presented him at the Hall of Fame in
a beautiful
2001.
Way.
It was moving. Yeah. Bob Knight can really rise to the occasion, and he did at that Hall of Fame induction, no question about it. But Coach K, and I have this in my book, he wanted no part of Knight presenting him. He had to be talked into that. I believe Pete Newell had a fair amount to do with that, to repair the bridge back to Knight to allow him to present Coach K in Springfield for the Hall of Fame. So they had a lot of ups and downs, mostly downs, ever since Krzyzewski beat him at the 92 Final Four. That's when it started to unravel. Bob Knight presented a note or gave a note to a Duke assistant before that Final Four game and said, give this to Mike. Thankfully, that assistant waited until after Duke won the game because the letter absolutely floored Krzyzewski. Knight said some pretty rough things in that letter. He felt that Mike had been disloyal in some of the quotes he gave reporters about their relationship. And it was never the same again. And finally, in 2015, Coach K had enough and they never spoke again. I don't believe they ever will speak again.
Now, my dad, before he passed, loved Notre Dame and he loved Duke. And for the same reason, he felt like that's how you do it. That's doing it the right way. Getting an education and still competing for a national championship. How much of that was reality or just the perception that came out of that?
You know, it's interesting, Don, and I think it was reality for the most part at Duke. But when I talked to players and I asked them, how much did that image mean to Coach K? That they were the shining city on top of a very corrupt hill that is major college sports, that enterprise. And most of the players, to my surprise, said they didn't really think he cared all that much about that. He just wanted to win. Winning was so much more important to him than maintaining that image. The players, I thought it was going to be almost a 50-50 split. And they said he just wanted to win. And he won a lot, right? Nearly 1,200 games overall in Division I. Over 47 years, nobody's going to touch that mark. But I do know assistant coaches who said he was maniacal about compliance. There are rival coaches, and I quote some of them in the book, who say every time there was an NCAA accusation, and you said there was one coach who told me who competed against Krzyzewski a lot, he said you would see something at Duke, and you would say there has to be a serious NCAA investigation. And then all of a sudden, somebody finds a sinkhole and flushes it, and there's no investigation. And I talked to Duke about that perception, and they allowed me to speak on the record to their compliance director, who explained at least their side of it, that we have a very good relationship with the NCAA because we have credibility. We have self-reported violations. If we do something wrong, we will admit it. Now, that hasn't happened often, but still a lot of coaches and rival schools around the country have seen things happen at Duke. We could talk about a few of those things, and it never goes anywhere. It almost seems that the NCAA is eager to clear them before ever really investigating. So that's been part of the deal at Duke as well.
talking to Ian O'Connor. His book is Coach K, The Rise and Reign of Mike Krzyzewski. And Ian's going to be at Bookends in Ridgewood, New Jersey on February 26th. That's a 1 p.m. signing. And he's going to be there with Bobby Hurley Sr., the dad of one of the great Duke players under Mike Krzyzewski, Bobby Hurley Jr. But I look at his friends, right, and the evolution that he's kind of undertaken as well. He hated Jim Valvano. Then he was at his deathbed every single day for months when he was at the hospital dying of cancer. Didn't like Dean Smith and then came around to loving Dean Smith. I don't know if when you're in competition with him, he doesn't like you and then he sees a different side, or whether he allows himself to grow. What do you get out of that, Ian?
I think what you just said, Michael, that after the obviously with Jim Valvano in his dying days, they were beyond competing against each other. And of course, Valvano was forced out at NC State over NCAA violations and allegations. And so they were no longer going head to head. And frankly, if you recall the magical season of 83 at that point, so NC State and Valvano wins a national title right after Dean Smith won one in 82. So he's next door to two coaches at his rival schools who just won national titles. And he's losing games at Duke, and everyone at Duke wants him fired. The boosters, the students, the faculty, the fans, they wanted him out. They were calling for his scalp. And the AD there miraculously gave him a contract extension, and he survived, and he became the greatest ever, really, I think, in my opinion. So,
and gave the contract extension, Ian, from the book you write. Bobby Knight called him. You know, he called it, what should I do? And Bobby Knight said, extend his contract.
That's so right.
Bobby had a big role in Coach K's life.
Well, Knight did a lot of positive things for him. He got him the Army job. He made him a grad assistant at Indiana in 75. He helped him get the Duke job. He put him on the Pan Am Games staff in 79. So that was in the book. You'll see a number of quotes from a close Knight associate who spent day after day after day with Bobby Knight, who said he'd spend half his days ripping Mike Krzyzewski because he didn't think he was loyal. He thinks that Krzyzewski forgot all the positive things that Bobby Knight did for his career. And Digger Phelps is quoted in the book saying, with Bob Knight, if he feels you're disloyal, that's it. And that was a direct quote to a question about Coach K. So clearly, and Digger Phelps was close to Bob Knight, clearly Knight feels Mike Krzyzewski was disloyal in the way he tried to distance himself in media reports from Knight in the 90s. And then when he became the Olympic coach, Bob Knight wanted to scout international opponents. And according to this associate, Coach K didn't even return his phone call and didn't allow him to do that. And after all the jobs that Bob Knight helped him get, he felt that he was betrayed on that front.
Well, if that did happen, I mean, I assume he didn't want the possible embarrassment of Knight doing something that would embarrass the team. But Ian, if he didn't even call him back, that's not a good look.
It's not. And so, but you could argue certainly that after everything Bobby Knight did for Coach K, that maybe he should have allowed him to do that. But the real threat of an international incident is there with Bob Knight. He witnessed that at the 79 Pan Am Games when he punched a Puerto Rican police officer in the face. He, of course, denied it. And Coach K denied it as well. But I actually talked to that police officer some years ago when I was working, I believe, at the Daily News. It didn't sound like he was making the story up. I think he took a punch right in the face from Bob Knight, who was briefly detained by Puerto Rican authorities. But so listen, there is a good side to Bobby Knight, but there's a dark side. And Coach K lived both of those sides of him and dealt with it over the decades. And it was a turbulent relationship, to say the least. I know when he broke Bob Knight's record for all-time victories with 903 in Madison Square Garden against Michigan State in 2011. And Bob Knight was doing commentary for ESPN that night. He wore a green sweater. So a lot of Duke staffers thought he wore Michigan State green, basically. He told people before that game he wanted no part of that broadcast. And afterward, when Coach K told him he loved him, what does Bob Knight say? Well, you did pretty good for a guy who couldn't shoot. And he said that so much over the years that Mike couldn't shoot, even though he led the Catholic League in Chicago twice in scoring. And Knight wouldn't let him shoot at Army. He was really mad that night about that. And said so on the plane back. He was talking to his wife, Mickey, about how I'm done with this guy. And that was one of the times when Coach K said he was done with Knight. and really wasn't. But finally at Pinehurst, that was the end of the relationship.
We're going to keep Ian O'Connor here. You could stay a little longer, right, Ian?
Absolutely.
All right, before we go to break, I have to ask you one thing, though. I'm looking at you. If you're watching on Yes, Ian's in, I guess, his office, surrounded by all of his books and stuff like that. And you've got, you know, graying on the side, and I'm graying on the side. Don's all gray. Peter doesn't have hair. Krzyzewski legitimately thinks that we're supposed to believe that at 75 he has real jet black hair, that he doesn't dye.
Yeah, none of his friends believe that either. He will not admit that publicly, but his friends all think he dyes his hair, and they laugh about it. But yeah, he'd be the only person on the planet age 75 who could maintain jet black hair without some help. So I'm pretty sure he's getting help.
Yeah, I would think so. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk more with Ian. Ian, you could read his stuff as well in the New York Post. He's got the new book out, Coach K, The Rise and Reign of Mike Krzyzewski.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Peter, I know you want to stir it up, so go.
What were your feelings when you saw the troubling, in a word, Brian Flores text conversation with Bill Belichick, Ian? Were you surprised? Did you think anything out of the ordinary? How'd you take that?
I mean, it's amazing that he started something pretty big there by making a text mistake and sending that to the wrong Brian. But it's a very serious issue. So it's troubling. And I think Brian Flores is the right guy to lead the charge on this front in a big picture context, in terms of lack of opportunity for African-American coaches, head coaches in the NFL. The Giants, listen, I know for a fact that John Mara, he really wanted Brian Flores to win that job. He really did. He would have cut off his left arm for that to happen, but he needed Flores to win the interview or the prize. He did a good job, but he needed him to win the process. And they felt that he came in second. And now maybe if Joe Shane's not making the decision or sort of running football operations at that point and has a very familiar figure and candidate in Brian Daboll, Flores would have won the job, but he didn't. And Shane was in place and he picked Daboll, who is a very qualified candidate. So, but I think that the Rooney Rule is a joke, and it's very hard to change billionaire behavior, white billionaire behavior. So I think what's going to happen organically and through legislation in the NFL, but also organically, the barrier that once existed between African-American athletes and the quarterback position is now pretty much obliterated. I think we'd all agree on that, maybe 99% of the way. So the more you see black quarterbacks at the high school level, the college level, that's going to lead to more black coaches on the offensive side of the ball. This is now an offensive league. Head coaches, I think, are coming more from that side of the ball. So I do think, and maybe this is optimistic thinking, but I do believe that pretty soon we're going to see a little bit of a change there, and you're going to see more, and rightfully so, African-American head coaches in the NFL.
Your friend and columnist, as well as you in the New York Post, Mike Vaccaro, said that if it was a new coach of the Knicks, then you could see him being fired after this year. Do you think there's a chance Thibodeau loses his job if they continue to spiral and don't make the play-in?
Well, I think it would be criminal to fire him after year two based on what he delivered the city in year one. He's having a bad year. There's no doubt about that. And very good coaches, and he is one, sometimes have bad years, just like players. And so I think he has to at least get the start of next season. I really do. Now, if they get off to a 7-17 start next year, then he's probably gone. Do I think there's a chance this offseason or after this season is over with that he gets fired? James Dolan is running the team, so you answer that question for me. Of course there's a chance. But I think they'll bring him back. And don't get off to a slow start next year, though, because then I think all bets are off. But I think Thibodeau is a guy, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt based on what he gave the city last year at a time when the city really needed what the Knicks delivered.
You know, it's interesting you bring up Dolan, because if you look at the Rangers last year, they weren't expected to go to the playoffs, but because they were embarrassed late in the year by Tom Wilson, that you saw the scorched earth that Dolan did. He fired an icon in John Davidson, fired Jeff Gorton. Eventually, David Quinn was let go. And that was where there were really no expectations. He just felt that they were embarrassed and pushed around. How is he going to feel about this Knicks team after all the momentum to turn around and maybe finish 12th in the conference? Wouldn't it also precipitate an almost identical reaction?
I think the reaction, Don, might be really more in the moving of Julius Randle in the offseason.
Mm.
I think that, again, Thibodeau has accomplished a lot in this league. He's not won a championship. In fact, he hasn't gone to the finals. But I think most people around the league consider him one of the better coaches without question. So I think Dolan will give him the benefit of the doubt. And Leon Rose will look to make a big move by trading Randle. But you can't take that to the bank. You certainly wouldn't bet the ranch on it because it's James Dolan. He's a wild card in everything. So is it possible Tibbs gets fired? Yeah, it's possible. I just think that would be the wrong move based on what he did in the first year. I think that gets him to year three and at least the first 20, 25, 30 games of year three. If he doesn't deliver then I think we can have a different conversation.
Peter, we're going to end this with a little breaking news. I haven't even told you guys this, but Ian O'Connor and his brother-in-law and also book writer and my colleague at Yes, Jack Curry, the next book that they will be working on, he'll go from Coach K to Mike K.
Is that true?
They're going to be doing my biography, yes. It's in the work, yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it.
Ian's going to have a hard time digging up dirt on me.
Hey, I I want you guys to help me win $100 here. I bet my son $100. I can get one of the three of you to attend my book signing at Bookends on February 26th at 1:00 in Ridgewood, New Jersey. And I know, Michael, there's no way you're showing up. Don, after what I said earlier, you're not showing up. So it comes down to Peter, I think, for me to win that $100. I should say that my son is a big fan of Peter's.
Really?
He's a hip-hop guy. Yeah, he's
all right.
I know you're not really a Kanye guy, right?
Well, these days he makes it a little tough. But right. Musically, sure.
Musically, so my son is a Kanye, Kendrick Lamar, Travis Scott guy. He told me when you joined the show, he said, this is a good move. I know others might have felt differently at the time. You've proven my son to be prophetic in terms of what you did for that show. So we need Peter at Bookings.
He sounds like a great guy. All right, Ridgewood it is. I'm coming.
Well, I'll tell you, I would have shown up there, no question. It's right down the street from my mom's. I spent a lot of time there when I was a kid. Hawthorne's right around the corner. But I have a Ranger game that afternoon.
And also, Ian, you know, I have yet to have indoor dining with my wife over the last 2 years. I'm going to break that now and go to your signing at Bookends. Yeah, that's what I'll do. It's a good way to break it, yeah. Notice how Ian didn't jump on the fact that he's doing my biography. He just doesn't even want to address it.
By the way, I think that's a bestseller. I think that has a chance to be top five New York Times bestseller because your life story is very fascinating. You lived a dream. We can do the whole kid from the Bronx thing. You said Jack Curry's the co-author?
Yeah. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah. It's okay by me. I don't know if it's okay by him.
Oh, he wanted to do it alone. Huh? Okay. I like it.
I'd rather collect maybe 100% of the cut on the writer's side of it, maybe, instead of 50%.
Yeah, he could do it on his own, Mike.
If I have to share it with anybody, I would share it with Jack.
Is the book out right now, the Coach K book?
Yeah, well, you can order it on Amazon. We were already the number one sports book in America yesterday. I think it was 33 overall of all books on Amazon in the country. So it was doing well, but its official release is next Tuesday.
All right, so we like to move books here, so we'll get you up from 33, hopefully, just from this hour, okay?
Well, you're good at that.
Yeah. Well,
you've
good
proven
stuff
that over the years.
Forget about the fact that you're a longtime friend. This is a great book, everybody. And if you love sports, it doesn't have to just be college sports. You don't have to be a Duke fan. This is an insight into the mind of a great leader, and I think Ian's done a wonderful job with it. So good luck with this, Ian.
Thanks so much, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.